I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I should like to help everyone if possible. But who am I but a humble podcaster? At least, I can introduce you to Sparkplug Coffee. That's right, Sparkplug starts with premium Arabica beans that have been directly sourced and fairly traded. They offer blends and roasts to suit any taste, including decaf and half calf. But the best part is that Sparkplug delivers this coffee to you in Canada or the US within 1 week of custom roasting it here in Toronto so that it always reaches you fresh and at its peak flavor, and you will taste the difference. You can order Sparkplug as you need it, or you can join the Sparkplug Autopilot Coffee Club. It's not a coffee of the month club. It's completely flexible and customizable. All the convenience, none of the commitment. And if you use the promo code TOP100PROJECT at checkout, and that's all one word with the number 100, Sparkplug will give you 20% off your next coffee order. So what are you waiting for? Don't settle for an imposter. Plug yourself in at sparkplugcoffee.com.
I can't. I always love that moment in this movie when the guy says, "Give a speech." I can't.
And then he gives one of the greatest speeches in cinema history.
He can.
Yeah.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Project.
And action.
Hello, friendly chums, and thank you kindly for downloading episode number 366 of the Ellis's Analysis. I said last week when we talked about Us that we now have an episode for every day of the year. Well, now we have enough even during a leap year. So we started podcasting in March 2013, and our goal was to review each and every one of the titles on the AFI's 1998 and 2007 Top 100 lists. We completed that relatively noble goal, relatively speaking noble, at the end of 2015. So now we just jabber about any old movie. And here's your warning right now. We will spoil every foot of this flick. I'm the stupid tyrant who wants to rule the world like Cobra or Jeff Bezos. Or Hitler, or Trump, Ryan Ellis. And here's the hair cutter who just wants to live, man. Won't you please let her live, man?
That's me.
My wife, Bev. That's still you. Okay, we just finished Scary Movie Month in October, but we all need some laughs these days because this has been a fuck of a year. So let's begin Funny Movie Month. The Great Dictator is a deliberate choice the day before the American election because one of the candidates is really hoping he gets to be a dictator. Great, the best dictator. Not the great, the greatest dictator. I'm like really smart. Best words. So warning right now that this episode will be very political, very sweary, I'm sure. And if you like Hair Trump, move along. I'm sure people who like Hair Trump don't listen to us anyway, probably, if they've heard some of our episodes before. Although we haven't been that political for quite a few months, I don't think.
We're never shy about our opinions exactly, but in most films it just doesn't really come up. This is a podcast about movies, not politics. God knows there's enough podcasts about politics.
Sometimes we've combined them. This will have to combine them, I think.
Yep. Well, that's why we picked this movie for this date.
So the coming attractions opinion question for this week's picture, The Great Dictator. Who played Hitler the best? Was it Chaplin in this film? Tom Duggan in To Be or Not to Be, who I forgot to mention last week, and we've now seen that movie between The Great Dictator and this recording. Dick Shawn and the producers. Noah Taylor in Max, a John Cusack movie from the early 2000s. Taika Waititi in Jojo Rabbit. Bruno Ganz in Downfall. I don't think I mentioned him either last week. What a performance that is. That might be the best one, actually. Or is it someone else I didn't even think to mention?
I actually looked up actors who've played Hitler in movies, and there's such an exceptionally long list, and it's mostly of stuff that I've never even heard of, and it just really illustrates to me how far I am from being the middle-aged dad audience for this kind of stuff. I haven't seen most of these movies. I've never seen Downfall.
You should see that one.
I never saw Valkyrie. I've seen Jojo Rabbit, and I love Jojo Rabbit, but he's not really portraying Hitler exactly. He's portraying a boy's imaginary friend. I am gonna give it to Chaplin for The Great Dictator because he gets so many points for guts because nobody wanted him to make this film. He was ahead of the curve when it came to satirizing Hitler. The studios, everybody was afraid of antagonizing Hitler, but he did it anyway. It's so much more impactful when you consider what he was risking so he could pop Hitler's balloon, so to speak. Mm. I'll call that my favorite. Even though he's not Hitler either, exactly, is he? But at any rate, I liked it a lot.
It's a good choice. I think all the ones I just mentioned are pretty good choices. But I didn't mention Bruno Ganz last week, and I should have, because that is the single best one I can think
of. Is that what the meme is from? People just kept putting different subtitles.
We're losing
over
here,
his
we're
rant.
Losing there. 999 or whatever it is. I don't care.
Yeah, and then people would replace it with they weren't happy about new features on the new iPhone or something, and he'd be raging out about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's been in a lot of movies before, but that is one of those performances you think Oscars? We talked about that on Us last week. Lupita Nyong'o, Toni Collette, Anthony Perkins in Psycho, many others who weren't nominated for classic performances. Bruno Ganz maybe transcended the Oscars, and he probably should have won the year he was in that movie, if not at least been nominated, but he wasn't nominated that I recall. So anyway, he's maybe the best I've seen, but Taika is my favorite because he's so much fun. I love Jojo Rabbit so much. But hey, we can't sleep on Tom Duggan because he's got two of my favorite comedy moments ever, and I had to swallow my tongue when they were going to come up so I didn't blow them for you. One is when he goes, "Hi, I'm myself," when he walks into a room. That's pretty good. The better one was definitely when he says to you, and I'm going to blow this for people who maybe haven't seen this movie, but it is going on 80 years old. It's 1942.
You're talking about To Be or Not To Be.
No, I didn't say that, didn't I? Okay, yeah. When he's supposed to be Hitler, and he says to two German pilots that go back to the door of the plane while it's in flight, "Jump!" And of course they do. So he's great too. Okay, the Give Peace a Chance movie, All We Are Saying, was released 80 years ago by United Artists on Halloween, 1940. Yep, October 31st. It had a pretty big budget for the time, which Chaplin financed himself, and he was a United Artists founder, I guess you'd call that, with Mary Pickford, Douglas Fairbanks, and Griffith? Yeah, Griffith was the other one, that's right. But it wound up being Charlie's biggest hit, despite the big budget that he had to pay for himself in a long shoot. This guy was the Kubrick of his day. That's the other thing, too, about this. It came out in 1940, but they were shooting long before that, probably sometime in 38.
Yeah, I think I saw that they started production in 38.
So all the more reason not to try to antagonize a world leader who they didn't know was going to be the guy we now think of as Adolf Hitler, the worst guy of all time. He wasn't that then that we knew of.
The shoot went on for about 550 days.
That sounds about right. It was a long, long shoot. Okay, Bev, this 80-year-old movie needs a skinny, so please give it on The Great Dictator. What is this movie about?
Charlie Chaplin is Adenoid Hinkle, the fascist ruler of Tomania, who bears a striking resemblance to Adolf Hitler. But he also bears a striking resemblance to a humble Jewish barber and World War I veteran, also played by Chaplin. The barber lives in a Jewish ghetto with his community where he falls in love with Paulette Goddard's Hannah. Together, they try to resist the cruelty of Hinkle's regime while plotting an escape to neighboring Austerlitz. When the barber's resemblance to Hinkle gets the two men mixed up with one another, he seizes the moment and uses Hinkle's platform to make a plea for a return to peace and brotherhood.
In the ghetto.
In the ghetto. And his mama cried.
In a nutshell. It's Duck Soup, only it's nearly an hour longer and has a preachy moral. Duck Soup has no preaching whatsoever. Or, make Tomania great again. Make it great again. Why do they use the fake names? Just call it France. Call it Germany. Go all out. You're obviously parodying and mocking a guy we all knew. Although maybe people didn't know who Hitler was really that much then. It's possible if he wasn't in the news that much. Maybe he wasn't at that time frame. But just call it France and Germany and the other countries around in that area that were involved in the war. Italy, obviously, where Napoloni is supposed to be from. Probably, although it's bacteria. Just be Italy. These names are kind of cheesy and lame.
It's really striking how much resistance Chaplin really did face. Everybody discouraged him. Even Jewish groups were like, don't make this film. You're just going to antagonize him and you're going to make it worse. Everybody thought that you could just not wish it away, but placate him and minimize the damage that he was doing.
England thought that.
Yes, of course, hindsight is 20/20. I don't think that people have approached our current crisis like that. We're going to make a lot of direct references between Hitler and Trump because, yes, it's a different time and it's a different man. It's a different country. But I really do believe that Trump wants to be a dictator. And whether he would be as evil as Hitler if given the opportunity remains to be seen. But he's done some pretty despicable things that I think really strongly parallel what happened in Germany during the 30s and 40s. So I'm saying that the world is reacting to Trump far differently than they reacted to Hitler. I don't know, maybe they were optimistic and they just hadn't really seen evil in its face like that in too many centuries, too many generations, whereas now, I know things are bad, but it's actually comforting to see how much people underreacted in the 30s versus how people are reacting now to Trump, because they thought that Chaplin was overreacting. He was considered, not career suicide, but They just thought he was nuts for making this movie. Nobody was getting behind him, and he was like this excessive do-gooder for wanting to strike out against what Hitler was doing. They had no idea how bad it had already gotten, and certainly how bad it was going to get before Hitler was done.
There are different reports online about that exact point, actually, that he changed the tone, Chaplin did, during filming, including the ending, where he just lectures. I'm not criticizing the message, but it is a lecture. But only when he found out how bad the Nazis were is when that was changed, is what I was reading. But then I also read that wasn't the case at all.
He changed it because Germany invaded France. So once France was occupied, then things were getting much more real and war was declared. When he started writing the script, I think they had already invaded Poland. And things were looking pretty bleak because Germany and Russia were cooperating to split up Poland, the German and Russian armies together, if Hitler had never invaded Russia and turned against them. Who knows what the world would look like today?
For those who don't know and want to do this Russia's bad thing and have always been bad, for a lot of history in the last 100 years or 70 or 80 years anyway, you could look at them as bad for sure. They've been America's enemy. And Putin's a terrible person. Maybe they're the enemy now. But they were an ally in World War II. And America can wave their flag all they want to. But America did not win World War II. Russia did. A lot of countries did, actually. Canada had a part of that, too. England should be given way more credit than they ever are as well for lasting and putting up with the fact, just like Germany. Their citizens put up with an awful lot, too, but they were the bad guys. But Russia lost more people than anybody, and they are never really given the credit they should for being the reason why that war was won by the Allies.
We may never know just how many people they lost in World War II, but estimates have it around 20 million Russians.
So America should get credit, but they should stop acting like they saved. The joke that's been in 1,000 comedies. Yeah, we saved your ass in World War II. You helped. You weren't the reason France is not just a German territory or part of their country now, or that Germany doesn't run the entire world right now.
And they didn't do it out of altruism. They did it because they got dragged into the war when Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. Isn't that right? I'm going to totally show my ignorance here. I don't actually know
it's way
that
deeper than
much
that.
More than the broad strokes.
America was not part of
the
war until the attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941. So a year after this movie came out, actually. More than a year after this movie came out. I'm sure they're involved in some kind of way, whether it be covert ops or what have you. My understanding of it is that they didn't want to be part of the war, and Poles were against joining the war. It wasn't that long after the First World War, which America was also a part of. Also were not the reason why that war was won. But anyway, that's getting into the weeds. We probably will again before this podcast is over, get into some weeds. But let's get into some numbers right now. There's a lot of plaudits for this film. Rotten Tomatoes numbers, 93% of them like this film. 40 fresh, only 3 rotten, for an average of 8.9 out of 10, and 95% of audiences. It's 57th on the IMDb's 250. Chaplin is well liked on that list.
Wow.
Because Modern Times, which was the last film that he did as the Tramp officially, he's the Tramp as the barber. Let's face it, he pretty much is the Tramp, although he does speak, which of course the Tramp never really did. But that was supposed to be his last ever outing as the Tramp. It was a few years before. That was 39th. I think that's your favorite Chaplin film, right?
Yes.
Because we've covered these three I'm about to mention. That one, of course, was on the list. City Lights is 42nd on the IMDb 250. And The Gold Rush is 154th. I would put that first of those three movies. That's my favorite of the three. But they're all excellent. And they're all on the AFI's two lists, both in 98 and 2007, for greatest movies of all time. Not many people have three movies on the list, certainly as a director anyway. And, of course, also as a star. Speaking of that, Chaplin was 10th on the top 50 stars. I don't mention that list very often because I don't have much regard for it. They're overlooking so many great actors. You had to start before 1950 or you have to be dead. So let's see. Newman, Nicholson, Pacino, Hackman, De Niro, Hoffman. And for the women, Streep, Fonda, Sarandon, Jodie Foster is a long list. I could go on with them too. None of them were eligible because they didn't start before 1950 and they're all still alive, at least at the time. Anyway, that list is stupid, but Chaplin was 10th. Not much range from Chaplin. He pretty much always played this type of character, except in this movie where he plays two characters. Great Dictator had 5 Oscar nominations. Best Picture, Best Actor for Chaplin, Supporting Actor for the guy who played Napoleone, Jack Oakey. The script and the music nomination was for Meredith Willson. That is a man. Chaplin has always had a hand in composing the score, because he is one of those people that does 5 jobs and probably more than that. He probably catered these damn movies too. But it was Meredith Willson's credit for the Oscar. That was not a win, though, because it didn't win any of those Oscars, just nominated for them. Best Picture win that year, do you remember what it was?
No.
We've been talking about it a little bit lately, because Netflix just released it.
Oh, Rebecca.
Bex won that year. And, of course, Grapes of Wrath won Best Director for John Ford.
Becky Bex.
Becky Bex, yeah. And Jimmy Stewart won Best Actor that year for Philadelphia Story. Great Dictator is in the National Film Registry. That was in 1997. Went in with Rear Window, The Bridge on the River Kwai, and West Side Story, all AFI films. We've covered them all, of course. And also The Hustler, which is in our archives way back when. Great Dictator's 37th on the Top 100 Laughs. 37th. Some Like It Hot was number one. And it was nominated for the Top 100 list in 2007, so the second time. I always found that fascinating. The Shining, Groundhog Day, Halloween, or some movies that got nominated the second time, but not the first. Obviously, movies that came out after the 1998 list. For example, the 2000s movies.
Yeah, but lots of movies that were there back in 1998.
But were overlooked, and this was not. So that's kind of cool that they recognized it the second time. But I would have thought the most worthy nomination for any of these lists would have been the Top 100 Cheers, Most Inspiring. But I wasn't nominated for that. I double-checked my records. I don't see it in the nominee category, and it certainly didn't make the Top 100 Cheers.
It's not really the most happy ending.
That's not the point. Most inspiring.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Speech
and there's
alone.
Lots of movies on the Top 100 Cheers that are not exactly happy.
Schindler's List is in there.
That's so crazy.
But most inspiring.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's a hell of a long build-up. We're about 15 or 16 or 18 minutes into this podcast. What do you think of, I think, your first time seeing The Great Dictator?
It was my first time seeing it. I mean, there's scenes that I've seen, obviously, but it's my first time watching beginning to end. And this film tried very hard and almost succeeded in putting me fully to sleep, which you can vouch. That's not something that really happens to me all that often, but...
You were tired.
This one had me struggling, man. Chaplin's silliness and fascism are not a perfect marriage. But I like the earnestness so much. He had a lot of power at the time. He was incredibly popular and influential, and he was trying to use the power that he had to fight against a scourge. It's a piece of propaganda. And if it moved the needle even a little bit away from fascism and anti-Semitism, then who cares if it measures up to Chaplin's standards of his other films, which are very incredibly high bars to meet in the first place. I doubt that Chaplin would care that much if this is not considered his greatest work, if he knew that it changed hearts and minds even a little bit and maybe helped turn public opinion against fascism and anti-Semitism.
I agree. That was the point of it. Being lauded then or now would be just one hell of a bonus, which it should be for any movie, really. You make a movie because you want to make the movie, hopefully. Of course, now we see so many movies from however many years now where they're made just for the bottom line. But when you do something like this, you're doing it because you want to, as you said, touch hearts and minds.
Yeah, and that's why he financed it himself. It kind of reminds me of one of my favorite films, Roger and Me. I listened to the commentary, and it was kind of heartbreaking because Michael Moore goes on over and over about how he considers the film a failure. It was his first film, and he really only made it because he wanted to save his hometown. And he's watching this film. He made the commentary maybe 10 years later, and he was just talking about how everything that was still standing in the film is gone now and how much worse the town is since he made it. It's about Flint, Michigan. I don't think I made that clear, so everybody knows Flint. It's just terrible what happened to that city. And his film did not save the city at all. A film that also may have been self-financed with a mission. Not necessarily to make great cinema. He went on to make more popular, successful films. I'm talking about Michael Moore.
We've compared Moore and Chaplin before. I think when we talked about Roger and Me, I mentioned how Chaplin was also a pretty wealthy guy, especially for his day. Would have been considered very wealthy, not just pretty wealthy.
A hero of the working class.
Was that because he played the tramp so often? And is he the tramp in this movie? No. He's a Jewish barber. But he's dressed similarly enough to the tramp, and he plays him a lot like the tramp when he's the barber character. That it's hard to say it's not that character. Plus, his last leading lady in modern times when he was the tramp, of course, that's the movie that has that classic Chaplin shot of walking off on the road into the sunset with a girl. Well, that's Paulette Goddard, who was his wife, and she's the character that he's in love with in this movie, Hannah. And just like in modern times, put a little soot on her face, and she's ugly as fuck. That Paulette Goddard, what a dog-faced gremlin.
She's not turning any heads. She's so beautiful.
We probably said this on Modern Times. She's one of the better-looking older actresses because people go on about, oh, in the old days, they're so much hotter. I've never agreed with that. I think they're better-looking now. Maybe that's just a taste thing and because I'm 46 in 2020. But people like Paulette Goddard, she definitely ranks as far as some of the best-looking women of all time. And she's a pretty solid actress in Modern Times and in this. She's not very highly billed in this movie. Doesn't have a huge role. But the funny thing is, the Jewish barber scene, so obviously her and Maurice Moscovich and Emma Dunn, they've got the really serious scenes to play where they are the Jewish people being assaulted in their town. And then most of the Heinkel scenes are supposed to be funny, and they are pretty funny. But that is one of the problems of this film. You just said it. It's got a tonal problem. And you can make that work. I think Jojo Rabbit really did make that work pretty well. To Be or Not to Be We watched that a few days after we saw this movie because I thought, you've got to see the Tom Duggan stuff, and it's not very long, so we'll watch it when I'm making a sauce, which is what we did. There's a big gap in the middle where there's no comedy at all, and it really follows...
you had completely forgotten that part of the film. Yeah. It just escaped your memory altogether.
Robert Stack's character is the focal point for a long time, and nothing against him. It's just not very funny for a while.
It just gets real plotty for about 25 minutes.
But Jack Benny's funny. I already said about Tom Duggan being really funny, and the other cast members are pretty good, too. The movie's got, I think, bigger laughs than this does. I know this has the globe scene, one of the classic Chaplin or just movie period great scenes of all time. Fair. And there are other laughs when he's with Napoloni, reminding me again of Trump. Do you think he likes me? I think he likes me. He sent me a beautiful letter. Beautiful, beautiful letter.
Those scenes are actually very insightful. I like them a lot. The way that these two grown children are jockeying for position. There's that cute gag where they're in the barber chairs and they just keep going up and up and up and up. And it's a great satire of what I imagine these men who are so full of pomp. The scene in the train station, I read this great observation about how it's very obviously a rear projection of the train coming into the station. And then when they cut to the close-up of the train, it's this pretty cheesy looking set. It almost looks like it's a amateur theater version of a train. That's on purpose because they're actually trying to lampoon all of the...
how phony everything is with these guys?
How phony everything is. They all care so much about appearance, and it matters so much that the carpet has to be there and they have to come out in the right place and... all these silly things that they do just to look big and to look important, they're just stage...
they're giant phonies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was mocking a minute ago, but Trump and his stuff with the president of China, but also, of course, with Kim Jong-un a couple years ago. I just mocked it a second ago. I wrote down in quotes, so I forget now if it's in the movie itself. Maybe I was just referring to when Trump did that, but does he like me? Am I wrong in saying that Heinkel actually says that about Napoloni in this?
Oh, I missed it.
Because that's part of what's going on here, is that Napoloni is the supplicant in a way, because Heinkel's the world leader, or going to be the world leader if things go the way he wants them to. Again, Hitler and Mussolini, references there, parallels there. But it's Heinkel who's acting like, but does he like me? What if he doesn't like me? Trump's the same thing. He runs America, but he goes over there a couple of years ago and just completely kisses the ass of somebody who should be at least... how do you respect that stupid idiot who doesn't belong in his job either? But he is the leader of his country. And Trump came across as if somebody who was just willing to just bend over and take whatever Kim Jong-un offered. So I love those parallels. Of course, that's 80 years before when Heinkel's doing it in this movie. Hitler banned the movie from being seen, but then he himself saw it twice.
Of course he did.
And no one ever said what he thought of it. But if he saw it twice, I don't think he would have hated it too much.
But he was obsessed with himself. He was a narcissist.
Well, maybe he watched it more than twice, but it was recorded. He only saw it twice. But wouldn't it be great and very fitting if Hitler had a better sense of humor than Trump?
I doubt it. I think it's the same way that Trump watches SNL and always claims that he accidentally watched Bill Maher. It's absurd that he'll claim he accidentally watched all these things from people who hate him. It's either that he just loves being talked about so much that it doesn't matter if it's negative or positive attention, or that he is as obsessed with the negative attention as the positive attention in one way or another. And it was probably the same with Hitler. We used to listen to this great podcast. Well, it used to be great, the Cracked podcast.
They don't have the podcast anymore.
Yeah, that's right. It's gone. Rest in peace. It was one of their regulars, Soren Bowie, who always made this great observation that he thinks that Hitler wasn't a genius. He was just a lucky idiot. And he would always... bring up evidence of how Hitler was just a person who was in the right place at the right time, happened to be a great orator, and have a particular talent, obviously a lot of gumption and no shame.
And rightly or wrongly, Germany really did suffer after World War I.
Right, and so the time was right, and the stage was set, and he just happened to bet on the right horse and accidentally trip his way into power. And there's all these other arguments that he made for how the party should never have won that election, and then it did, and blah, blah, blah. And kind of similar to Trump.
I wonder if there's any cheating involved in that.
I don't think that Trump is a genius. I think he's just a lucky idiot. I think his particular malignant personality disorder just happened to be the perfect fit for this time and place where the Republican Party is just so rotted from the inside out.
And a very sick country also.
Kind of appeals to these cult-like Americans that are so obsessed with owning the libs. Let's face it, they're racist or they're xenophobic or they just hate change or economically anxious. Give me a break. And maybe some of them are just selfish pricks who would rather pay half a percentage less in tax than stop children from starving. But at any rate, I don't think Trump is a genius. I don't think that Hitler was necessarily a genius. It was a tinderbox and he was the match.
It really helped that Putin wanted chaos in America. and tipped that election in his favor, which we now absolutely know is true. But
yeah, they cheated.
You're so political. Election. You're against me. No, we're just telling the truth, you stupid piece of shit. Well, this movie certainly contributed to Chaplin being accused of being a communist, which is interesting when you think about that. But this whole notion of we can all live together as one.
Why is there only two dichotomies? Why is it fascist or communist?
Because it's Americans.
What a crazy accusation.
Look, I know, I'm sure we have plenty of American listeners. I don't mean to be insulting them in general. But they got the leader they fucking deserved in a lot of ways. It's awful that he's been as bad as he's been. But just from the standpoint of staring at his navel all day long and think that he matters more than anything else about every situation always. A lot of countries could be accused of this. Probably our country could too. Canada's not exactly flawless by any means when it comes to navel gazing. But America thinks it is the greatest in every way. They still go on about this. We're the greatest country ever. The greatest country in the world. Based on what? Marketing? You're the greatest at that. No doubt about that. Are you the best basketball country in the world? Yeah, you're probably best at that. Are you the best at baseball? No. I'll mention again, we've probably talked about it before, the newsroom scene, the pilot, when Jeff Daniels has that big speech about the things they're actually number one in. That's probably still true. That scene was almost 10 years ago they did that. We've met a lot of people there. We've been there. They've been lovely.
I think Americans are great. I really believe this.
They also maybe deserve the leader they
got. Are Americans who are jerks. There are Americans who are wonderful and altruistic. And there are jerks everywhere. I think Americans are great people. Part of the reason that we get so upset about American politics is because it's very, very hard to watch our neighbors suffer like this. And it's also very hard from the perspective of a country that, and like you said, we are far from perfect, but good public education, having public health care, not like we're free from corruption, but we trust our government. And the fact that we don't have any media properties that are owned and operated by the Murdoch family, that helps tremendously. They have tried to get a foothold in Canada, and for whatever reason, it has just never taken. That, I think, is what separates us from Americans, is that we are not being brainwashed every day by a very organized group of media.
Some people we know are.
Facebook is not helping. Yeah, Facebook is definitely making dents, and a lot of those groups are Russian, too. The Russians are coming after Canada. It worked so well in America.
Why wouldn't they?
It worked in Ukraine. They're going to take over the world with propaganda. It is incredible the power that propaganda has, and I feel like we're watching it in real time, and it's terrifying, and it's very disheartening.
We'll get back to the movie in a second, but one more point about what we're going on about right now is that I think way too many politicians envy Hitler, and they want to repeat some of his moves. Not necessarily gassing people by the thousands or by the millions, although maybe that too. Just the notion of someone's Jewish, they didn't focus on this so much, but if you're black, you're the scapegoat, fuck you. And that's what we've seen in America the last 4 years, and really longer, but especially since Mr. Orangeface got into power. With them, it's more people from south of the border, not just Mexicans, obviously. And that's what worries me about humanity, is that people like this have had power before, but way too many of them would say that they're pro-America, but they seem to like a lot of the things that Hitler stood for.
Well, even if it's in a less direct way, the Trump administration absolutely has blood on their hands.
Well, their own garbage. Garbage, obviously, is supposed to be the pun there, but garbage is Stephen Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel, in this movie is garbage, and he might as well be their own little troll. The guy who said, maybe he didn't say it, but you know it's him that really thinks it more than most people, probably even more than Trump, which is the cruelty is the point about kids in cages at the border, which, as we record this, is getting even worse. It was always bad. It's even worse now. Okay, let's go back to Great Dictator. We'll get back into politics, I'm sure, as we go through. Words are capitalized in the title cards of this movie, and it isn't necessary, but it is Trump-like, the way that words are just capitalized randomly. That's also a title card thing back in the silent era. And of course, Chaplin, in a way, was still thinking of himself as a silent film director, even though this movie's a full-on talkie. Modern Times got into that a little bit, although he himself didn't talk. He had that gibberish scene in Modern Times, I believe it was.
Let's briefly address how terrible the audio is in this film. We've seen other films from the early 40s, and they have full soundscapes.
Mm-hmm.
This seemed just straight up unfinished, particularly the opening scenes in the wartime.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's ambient noise of gunshots, bombs going off, and then sometimes there's just total silence. Not even music. And literally bombs are going off around him, and there's no audio at all. It looks like a mistake. And that is low-key what's happening in the whole film, that the audio's, I don't even want to say sloppy, it just really seems unfinished.
There's that one nice touch, though, when he, as Heinkel, will say something and they all apply, but then he makes an arm gesture, especially the gesture, and then it just cuts right off immediately. That had to have been deliberate, I think. That had to be a comedy.
Oh, moment. Yeah, absolutely. And that's funny. But that's very specific and intentional, where it was as though they put those things in, the audio that matters, that applies to the plot, is all there. But all those extra touches are not at all. And it's funny because Chaplin was so particular. We talk about how this film took almost 2 years to shoot. He worked on the script for months and months. The first draft was 300 pages, and he would redo scenes over and over again. And
this is what we got, huh?
And this is what we got. When you were in the editing suite, you just weren't like, hey, can we just add some ambient background noise? Would that be okay?
To make it consistent, at least.
Although, after all the time it took them to make the film, it is possible that he just was like, just put it out.
I'm tired.
Just gotta get out there. Like, the war's gonna be over by the time this film is We were talking about Strangelove when we were watching it, because there's the food fight scene, mm-hmm. which is great, actually. The stuff with him and, what's his name, Napoloni?
Napoloni. That's supposed to be at the end of Dr. Strangelove. It was going to be
exactly.
a food fight. Which I think was a mistake that they even were maybe going to do that in Dr. Strangelove. I don't think that's the right tone for that movie.
Yeah, so they shot the food fight for Dr. Strangelove and it never ended up in the film. They shot a whole ending of The Great Dictator where all the soldiers are dancing and the people who are listening to his speech have this great big buoyant reaction. And he shot it for days and he just was never happy with it, never happy with it, couldn't get it right, wasn't satisfied, then decided to cut it all together. So both films have these big elaborate end pieces that just ended up getting cut.
Well, I'll say what happens next then, since you mentioned the ending. I say what happens next at the end of this, after his passionate speech, and at least Hannah and the people around her are probably going to be inspired. Many others would be undoubtedly too. But the enormous Nazi crowd ignores the barber's earnest message and swiftly kills him.
Yep.
Ask for peace, will ya? Then humanity continues being horrible, as humanity always has been and always will be. Yes, I'm a cynic.
Maybe they wouldn't kill him. They would probably just apply cognitive dissonance to that speech and pretend it never happened. Because every so often, Trump says or does the right thing. But then everyone just says, oh, he's just doing that for the camera. He's just doing that for the campaign. And they just don't worry about it. They hear what they want to hear. So a speech like this, I think we've seen evidenced here in 2020. Even when you say everything right and all the most inspiring, perfect words, all the best words.
And the best words.
You just can't turn a ship like this around with sentiment. And it didn't happen when The Great Dictator came out. There were plenty of voices of reason back then, just as there are now. But it's full steam ahead.
One of the reasons why war happened then, I'm sure, America being involved, and this was about 20 years before the speech that Eisenhower gave. Well, yeah, literally. He left in, I guess, early 61, after Kennedy won the election in 1960. Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex. And his whole point was, because there are dozens and dozens of people in Congress, doesn't mean they're corrupt, doesn't mean they're awful people, but they want this, as Bill Maher's called it many times, jobs program when it comes to the defense budget, to make sure that their state is helped out. Their people in their state are helped out by this.
Yeah, as long as that aircraft carrier isn't built in their district.
Yeah, this is beyond senators a lot of the time. It's way more about the Congress people, especially then it was been congressmen. That's what he was warning about, and that's what they got. War is big business for any country. It certainly is for America. A lot of people say that's one reason why Hitler decided to start a war when Germany was suffering so much for many years thereafter World War I. A war can fix your problems. Look at the way America prospered after World War II. They didn't lose as much as England and Germany and other countries did because they were the road team. Their country was physically fine.
Yeah, the war wasn't on their front.
But they lost people
too. They lost people, but they didn't lose cities.
But war is always big business, and that's one reason why war will always continue, especially when America continues funding. We just had this question in our trivia night a couple days ago. I'm the host through all the pandemic because we can't go to the bar anymore. And I had a question for you guys about who's number three in defense spending, because America's way ahead of everybody else for number one. Then it's China, and then it is. Do you remember?
It's India.
India's number three.
I remember because I said that, but then the group outvoted me.
You guys literally voted. It was 4-3.
Yeah.
They said Russia,
they said
and three
Russia.
Of you said India.
Yeah. I was right, guys.
And that's one reason why
wrong about plenty of them. So.
That's one reason why war will always continue in this world, not just America. I'm not trying to completely shit on America. This is humanity. But speaking of war, when the Jewish barber is in World War I, he's part of the whole thing where a giant cannon misses its target, but then he's part of the whole thing when it plops out a dud. So that's a phallic moment because of a cannon. but it also has a nipple on it, effectively. That's what the shell, artillery shell, looks like. So that's a double phallic moment. Not double phallic, but a double sexual moment in one scene. Funny, too, because Hitler himself was in World War I, I believe.
Yes. And
the Jewish barber is the one we see portrayed, though. I've seen this movie, I guess, four times now, but it's been a long time since I saw this. And I forgot that that's not supposed to be Heinkel early on. Then the barber survives not only the war, but a brutal plane crash with Schultz, which pays off later on because Schultz forbids the stormtroopers from doing anything to certain people in the barber's area. Obviously, the barber himself. Maybe the barber would have died a lot sooner. Well, he doesn't die at all, but he would have been hurt or worse a lot sooner, except that Schultz knows him, so that helps a little bit. But then he still gets captured later on anyway.
It got me thinking about the other Chaplin films we watched and how their plots aren't really very important. They're really just kind of an excuse to set up one vignette after another where Chaplin gets to do something silly and fun and in the way that only he can do because he's just such an extraordinary performer. So he never got very good, I think, at storytelling in the sense that it's not compelling. And because, as you said, the tone is very inconsistent and it's just not consistently funny. And it's long. It's like 2 hours long.
It's one of the longest movies he ever did.
Yeah, other Chaplin films is they're really short and sweet. They leave you wanting more, whereas here, it was putting me to sleep.
They probably should have just stuck with the Heinkel stuff. Just do a parody of him, have Napoloni be part of it.
Maybe have some small subplot with the barber. Although the Jewish ghetto is important because people genuinely didn't know what was happening to the Jews in Germany. They didn't know about the ghettos. They didn't know the stormtroopers were stringing them up in the streets. The stuff wasn't making the news. It just wasn't common knowledge. So it was really important to him to put this in people's faces, which is why it's just not funny enough. But he's not a good enough storyteller, as in a full 2-hour length film storyteller.
With plot, anyway.
With plot, yeah, yeah. He can tell a story in a scene beautifully and succinctly with so much heart. But over the course of the whole movie,
He's the episodic guy. Yeah. And it's funny because Woody Allen always seems to prefer the Marx Brothers. He's mentioned them in his movies before. Might be Hannah and Her Sisters, where he goes in to see a Marx Brothers movie and that makes him feel better when he finds out he thinks he has cancer. I think it's funny that he feels that way because he's more like Chaplin, the way he acts, the way he looks, obviously. Little guys, they're both really, like, maybe the Marx Brothers are not very big either, but he physically resembles Chaplin more than he does the Marx Brothers. And
but
his
he's
comedy
words.
Is more like, but Chaplin, in a way, is more wordy than the Marx Brothers. I know that sounds weird because the Marx Brothers, if not always, most of the time, were speakers, but then that was mostly Groucho that did the talking.
Well, yeah, Groucho did all the talking. Harpo never spoke. But all of Woody Allen's comedy is that he's a wise ass. It's
but
all
he
his
wasn't,
script.
But he wasn't absurd the way that the Marx Brothers were.
No, that's true.
Chaplin was funny, and he earned the laughs from the scenario making sense. But Woody, Scorsese also applies this, not the comedy, and then certainly Chaplin, and maybe the Marx Brothers films apply to this too, very episodic. If you watch 5 or 10 minutes, it could be a short film on YouTube, and you'd really enjoy it. Doesn't mean the movies aren't great in total. But when it comes to plot, Scorsese said it about The Departed, the first movie he's ever made that had a plot. Whether or not that's true is debatable, but Woody Allen's movies didn't really have a lot of plots either. And this one doesn't really entirely until the very end when the two guys get switched. And then you've got the nice guy that, I can't. I guess I can't. I can deliver this wonderful speech and then I'll be influential to people because they think I'm this bad guy who's going on and on and on about all the people to blame. No one's to blame. Don't be a follower, soldiers, follow your own heart, that kind of stuff, which is a wonderful message. But until that point, it does feel like it's a little episodic. The most famous scene in this whole movie is definitely the globe, which was a balloon. Obviously, the Chaplin was playing with it. It took days to shoot that. I guess you could call it worth it because it really stands out as one of the great scenes in this movie.
Perfect.
Such a visual metaphor as well. Apparently, he did it in a previous project, and then it does pop as well. He uses his bum at one point, which is also not phallic, but sexual in a way. That's probably deliberate.
Well, I think of it as childish, but yeah, sexual. Because he's lying face down, too, so it's almost like he's thrusting backwards. Yeah, yeah.
And that scene, like so many scenes in this movie about Heinkel, and Napoloni for that matter, do what Mel Brooks did with the producers, and what Taika did last year with Jojo Rabbit, and some of the other ones we mentioned in the opening, To Be or Not to Be also, they mock the awful. Rather than, he should be stopped, and here are all these points I can put out there that can beat Hitler. Well, if you can't do that, especially if you're just a filmmaker, then mock the asshole. Make him look fucking stupid like he deserves to be stupid. Because another thing that's funny about Hitler, too, and all of his stupid followers, his asshole followers, Goebbels and Goering and those guys, you're the master race. And now we see this with Trump and Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon and Jared. Jared, a few years ago, maybe this had a little bit more sense, but you're the master race.
Jared's really? Jewish, though.
No, I'm talking just their looks, just purely their looks. Really? You guys? And I want to include Jared then, because a couple years ago, he was a good-looking guy.
He's not who they consider the master race. He's Jewish.
My point is that these kinds of people that act like, everyone should be like us, physically, why?
Yeah, I know.
What do you have to offer physically that anyone should want to
make your case
follow?
Because from a looks point of view.
The last thing I would ever say to anybody, including my wife sitting across from me right now, is that I should be part of the master race with my looks. Hell no. So the German spoken in the movie by Heinkel is gibberish, with some German thrown in. Every once in a while, there's a word that applies to the German language to make it sound like it's legitimate. That's also supposed to be even funnier than I think it actually is. Maybe it was funnier in 1940 to do that.
Yeah, maybe you had to be there for those scenes. They go on and on. The banana, the banana, the banana. It kind of looks like two improv actors that don't know how to end a scene.
And I think he's definitely better as Heinkel, so I won't say that much more about him playing that character. The most important part of what him playing the barber is probably when the resistance begins. So they organize, they meet, they pratfall, especially Chaplin.
Yeah. That scene's cute.
But then the barber ends up in a concentration camp. So again, the tonal problems. You can make that funny. Life is Beautiful. We didn't say that one. Not a Hitler movie, but it's about the Holocaust. I haven't seen that movie in a long time. Maybe I'd feel differently about it now, but I always thought that Benigni did a hell of a good job of making that movie work. He's a clown. He's playing a Chaplin character in a way.
Yeah.
But that movie balanced the tragedy and the comedy quite well. There's that great scene of drama when he finds out the guy he thinks is going to help him out is not going to, and the way his face falls. The movie's pretty good. I haven't seen it in a long time. But because we prefer him as the dictator in this movie called The Great Dictator, let's talk more about the Hitler and Chaplin connections.
One of the reasons that Chaplin was fascinated by this and wanted to make a film about it is he felt he had this weird connection with Hitler. They were born just days apart, and they were both born into pretty bad poverty, and they both rose to these staggering levels of success.
Just like Trump.
And according according to Chaplin's son, Charlie Jr., their similarities really haunted him. And he was quoted as saying, just think, he's the madman, I'm the comic. But it could have been the other way around. He really just thought it was luck of circumstances. He didn't end up being a tyrant.
You've said before that Friedkin said that if he wasn't a filmmaker, making French Connection, Exorcist, and all those kinds of movies,
he'd be a serial killer.
Right.
Yeah. If you don't have that outlet. I spent a lot of time around funny people, around comedians. It's true. They're messed up. It's like a pathology in itself to pursue fame, and especially as a comedian. I'm not saying this is true about every funny person who's funny for a living, but I met a lot of broken people. I just don't have that pathology. I'm just not fucked up enough to need this as bad as you need to need it.
Yes, she is, Sam. Right, Sam? I don't agree. She's perfect. I'm a dog. I love her. There she is.
Chaplin obviously was very haunted by these connections. I think it's pretty well known that part of the reason that Hitler wore his mustache like Chaplin was because he was a fan.
Well, and who did it first?
Oh, Chaplin did it first. Absolutely. Okay, yeah. When did the Gold Rush come out?
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Right? Gold Rush is 25.
Yeah. And if you look at old pictures of Hitler, he had a full mustache when he was younger. I've certainly heard that he wore it to mimic Chaplin.
Or it was a shaving accident.
Yeah, and then he just went with
it. But I want something on my face, so I'll leave this little bit. They're the opposite of me. I can't grow hair there.
And Chaplin also put his money where his mouth was and donated frequently to relief funds for Jews trying to escape Germany. He was dubbed the 20th century Moses by papers at the time.
What a communist. Oh, God.
Chaplin wasn't Jewish. He just sympathized with their cause.
He was English.
And was horrified. Well, there were English Jews, dude.
Okay, yeah, but...
They didn't all live in Germany.
Well, no one would have thought he was English either, from London, where he's actually born. I'll look it up right now.
Oh, right. When they watched all the tramp films. He can't be Jewish. He's English.
So he's from Walworth, which is near London, I guess. Maybe it's a suburb sort of thing. London, England. He died in Switzerland, actually. Christmas Day, 77. He was 88. Also, we haven't said this yet, but love the young ladies.
There's lots of nice things to say about Chaplin, but in his personal life, apparently he was not the nicest guy.
When you do hundreds and hundreds of takes, we talked about that in City Lights, the last scene with the flower girl. There's no way the actors are saying, yeah, let's keep doing this, Charlie. This is great.
He was a bit of a dictator on set. And he was one of those filmmakers that was the writer, director, producer, and star.
And composer.
He had to have so much control. So, yeah, I can see how he saw himself in Hitler and how that scared him.
He's also the narrator in this movie.
Oh, that's right, he is too.
At least some of his movies were put on Netflix recently. I watched The Gold Rush not that long ago that way. And I love the gold rush, but his narration doesn't help. He's always saying, the little fellow, the little fellow. It's so dumb. I don't like his narration on those movies. You don't need narration on those three classic silent comedies, Gold Rush, Modern Times, City Lights. But he's narrating this movie. Not a lot, but when he does narrate, it's that same kind of tone and voice. I don't really think it works, to be honest with you.
We should spend some time talking about his charms, though, because it's been a long time since we've covered a Chaplin film. I don't think you could possibly exaggerate what a talented performer he was and his gift for physical comedy. There's a scene that they'll show frequently from this film where he gets hit in the head with a frying pan and he does this kind of dance up and down the street. It's actually visually beautiful because the street has been covered in graffiti, Jews on all the storefronts, and he's doing this silly, goofy dance, which is an absolute masterpiece of physical comedy. So he's going up and down on the curb and his face, his full body, it's hysterical. It's so charming. And he can exude pathos like maybe no actor ever in history.
Agreed.
There's something about him, the second he's on screen, if he wants you to like him, you don't just like him, you love him. You think of him as family. He is just so sweet and winning and you can't help but root for him. And hysterical. He truly was as great of a performer as everybody says.
He did make a lot of movies in his 50 years in the business. 50 total years, but what an output. We've talked about it already. Obviously, The Kid and The Circus are two other things he did. He only acted in 19 movies in 53 years. He wrote 20 movies and directed 18. Mostly, of course, were silent. And as we've said a few times, if you want to go back way to the beginning of our archives, some of the very first movies we ever covered, The Gold Rush, City Lights, Modern Times, we did them in order, so they are way back when, I think, The Gold Rush may be our third ever movie that we covered, in fact. It probably was. And they were funnier. I think they were better. And yeah, I don't remember what we said on those rookie podcasts, but I'm sure we raved, if nothing else, about how funny the damn man was. And of course, Buster Keaton was a, I wouldn't say rival, but a contemporary, as was Harold Lloyd. We've never covered a Harold Lloyd movie before, but we have covered The General, because that made the AFI list too. Well, that would have been the same time frame, probably not long after we did The Gold Rush. I have seen about the same amount of films from both guys. If I had to pick one, you just have to pick one and that's it. That's all that stays on your shelf. It probably would be Chaplin, but I love a lot of what Keaton does too.
I'll say this for The General versus all of the Chaplin films we watch, is he does have a handle on story.
Oh, yeah.
His character has a great through line in that film. Every scene comes after the next with intention of moving the story forward. He makes the jokes around that.
And for what it's worth, The General was, I think, 18th on that second list. Didn't make the first list. And the Chaplin film stayed on both lists, and I think all of them went up. And some of them went up a lot. I believe City Lights went up a lot, for one. But The General, making it that high, really says a lot, considering it missed the first time. The silent film has not really been that well honored by the various AFI lists. But then I do think, and you've said this before too, comedy generally doesn't age well. Most of these older movies don't make us laugh that much. To Be or Not to Be, I'm in the kitchen making that sauce. You're in the living room a few feet away from me. I heard you laughing a lot, which was great.
It was funny.
Sometimes I missed the jokes because I was busy doing what I was doing, but I've seen the movie multiple times. That movie's aged, I think, apart from the middle section, extremely well. Great Dictator, fine. The other Chaplin movies, I would say, pretty great. Haven't seen them in a long time, apart from The Gold Rush. But that's the problem, is that most older comedies just aren't that funny to us anymore, with some exceptions.
And particularly comedies with a political bent like this. When we talk
this
about...
This has not aged, though, unfortunately, if you think about it.
No, it's so relevant. It was actually quite eerie and sad watching some of those scenes and feeling like, wow, this feels so relevant right now, in a way that I never believed in my lifetime I would see somebody rise the way Hitler rose.
Because after all, Obama wanted to give Americans health care. That makes him Hitler.
Oh my God. It boggles my mind that this is happening in the world right now. We did our episode about our favorite comedies. Was that just a few months ago? It was...
Yeah, it was this year.
Near the beginning of the pandemic, I think it was.
Yeah, around then.
I put as my number two comedy Borat. And then I was like, oh, let's watch Borat. And then I was like, oh my God, what?
It's still funny, but there's been stuff that's aged that
way. It has its moments. In some ways, I could see how Sacha Baron Cohen is a contemporary of Chaplin in that he is gutsy. He's a great physical comedian, too. I don't think people give him credit for that, but he's mostly famous for having balls of steel. And his Borat 2, subsequent film, would love to talk about it, but we haven't seen it yet. But Borat aged so much worse than I thought it had. Mm. It was, at times, excruciating to watch. The world has changed so much since... When did it come out? 2005?
2006.
It's an incredible thing to see something become a relic so quickly.
Okay, the movie is 1:37:1. We saw a pretty great black and white print on Canopy. We own the DVD, but we thought maybe Canopy would be as good or better. It looked all right to me. It looked pretty good.
It looked great for a film this old. It looked exceptional.
Also true, yeah. Very true.
Sounded like shit, but, you know.
Cinematographer was Carl Struce, who shot 138 films, including Sunrise. I think there was multiple people that shot that movie, one of the best-looking old films of all time, black and white silent film. And Roland Tothereau, who shot Chaplin's Big Three, City Lights, Modern Times, Gold Rush. The editor, Willard Nico, cut City Lights and Modern Times, and Harold Rice also cut this movie, his only movie. I'm sure Chaplin cut it too, but doesn't have a credit for that. And the composer was Chaplin, who often was a composer in his films, and I already mentioned Meredith Wilson, who was a dude, two L's, I believe, too, unless I misspelled it here, who also had a composer credit on The Little Foxes and was the one nominated for the Oscar for this movie. Maybe Chaplin thought, I can't be nominated for another Oscar because he was the producer and the actor that got nominated already, and I think, well, he wrote the script, so he must have been nominated for three as it was. But we've said this before, there aren't a lot of movies where a person was nominated or whatever, just had four, five, six jobs in a film. Harold Ramis, of all people, on Groundhog Day. Writer, director, producer, acted in the movie, and co-wrote that song that you don't like, but Weatherman song. Five credits in one movie for Harold Ramis, of all people.
Bad.
And Chaplin was often credited with five or maybe even six things in one movie. He was truly an auteur. Okay, a political podcast, but about a funny movie. Not as funny as a lot of ones we've covered. If I had to rank this numbers-wise, we don't really do this very often, I'd say a generous 7. The Heinkel scenes make it an 8.5 to a 9. The Jewish barber scenes, not that they're bad, it's just that they're maybe in the wrong movie. Haven't seen it in a long time. Glad I saw it for this podcast. It's obviously so relevant, unfortunately. It shouldn't be relevant, but it is. What are your last thoughts on The Great Dictator?
I'm afraid I'm just going to have to consider this a film I respect more than I enjoy. You really had to be there. And that's fine. I'm so glad this film was made. It's something of a testament to the power of catharsis of satire. And, of course, it feels so eerily relevant again now.
And Duck Soup and To Be or Not to Be cover similar material and I think do it better in both cases.
Well, Duck Soup was significantly before this, before I think the threat of the Nazis was really looming.
Mm-hmm.
And
what's
To Be or
Nazis?
Not to
That's
Be
true.
Is clearly made after the world had made their mind up about Hitler. So it felt like safer comedy, safer level of satire. But The Great Dictator is gutsy as shit. We've got to give him credit for going there when nobody else was.
That is true. Fair enough, yeah. Duck Soup, you're right, it was 33. It isn't about fascism exactly, but it is about stupid people in war.
But it's very generic. They're not picking on anybody specific, and anybody who doesn't want to see themselves in that film would just pass over all the details that apply to them very easily. Not like it's not biting satire, because it is, and actually, definitely way better lines. You want to talk about the script, and Groucho Marx has so many great zingers in that movie.
Which would you rather watch again, Duck Soup, To Be or Not to Be, or Great Dictator?
Oh my god, if I'm being honest, probably To Be or Not to Be. But I should watch Duck Soup again.
Okay, this is supposed to be funny movie month, so let's get back to that in 7 days, and we'll talk about a movie the AFI ranked as the 35th most hilarious movie of all time. This was the 37th, according to them. This is the one about the invisible giant rabbit, Harvey. My 6 foot race, 6 foot 3.5. That'll be a bone of contention when we talk about it next week. So the coming attractions opinion question, again, an opinion for Harvey. If you had an imaginary friend, what form would you want that friend to take?
All right, so for the answer to that question, for our answers, and give us your answers, we'd love to hear from you guys. Check out our next podcast about Harvey. In the meantime, Harvey. Check out our website, top100project.com. Don't forget to favorite or subscribe to the Top 100 Project wherever you listen to us. All of our episodes are available for free. There are hundreds of them and includes all 123 movies that made the AFI's 98 and or 07 list of the best American films ever made. In exchange for all this great content, perhaps you could leave us a rating and a review that helps people find us. I'm at Bev Ellis Ellis. Ryan is at MovieFiend51. Or you can reach us by email, top100projectpodcast@gmail.com. And to enjoy freshly roasted premium coffee delivered straight to you in Canada or the US, please go to sparkplugcoffee.com and use the promo code TOP100PROJECT. And that's all one word, TOP100PROJECT. It's not case sensitive. And that will get you a 20% discount.
But I can't order that. Or maybe I can. All right, my last word on this, the day before the American election. If a certain fascist, rapist, racist, mob boss piece of garbage has his way, it might not matter. But all you Americans, vote tomorrow if you haven't already. Many people have. They're setting records for that, actually. Most of you never had control over politics, and you certainly don't these days with Citizens United, one of the worst things in the history of democracy, Citizens United, that's stupid law. But it's never going to get better if you don't at least cast a ballot. So please vote. You've heard this from thousands of other people. We probably can't influence you at this point, but if you haven't voted, take the time if you possibly can, because you all have no other power in your country whatsoever other than that, I would say. Vote, vote, vote. Try to make a difference.
And vote for Biden, for crying out loud. We can just say it.
Yeah.
I honestly want to say thank you from Canada. I'll tell you from the outside perspective, I am grateful to all the Americans who are resisting and who are working really hard to fight fascism, which is knocking down the door.
Be a Jewish barber. Don't be Heinkel.
No, I'm not going to sleep very well tonight. I'm sure about that. But I really do think that I need to express my gratitude to all of you out there who have worked really hard to make a difference.
And cut.
And cut.